So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 15, text number 106, which is on the board. This chapter is entitled Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya Offers Prasad to the Lord, which means one of the Lord's associates is offering him food which has been blessed by the Lord himself. Okay, so translation in purple by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, this is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is about to reply to a question that he's been asked. And the question he's being asked is, how can I recognize a Vaishnava or a devotee of God? Please let me know what is a Vaishnava, what are his common symptoms. So this verse that we're chanting together is God's reply, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's reply. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is the topmost human being. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, that simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna once, a person becomes perfect. Such a person is understood to be a Vaishnava. With such faith and belief, one may begin a life of Krishna consciousness. But an ordinary person cannot chant the holy name of Krishna with such faith. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita, Krishnati Yasya Giritam, Manasadriyata. One should accept the holy name of Krishna to be identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Transcendence Himself. The holy name of Krishna is also identical with Krishna and is also Chintamani. The name Krishna is the personification of sound, perfectly transcendental and eternally liberated from material contamination. One should understand that the name Krishna and Krishna are identical. Having such faith, one must continue to chant the holy name. When one is situated on the neophyte platform, one cannot understand the devotional ingredients of a pure, unalloyed devotee. However, when a novice engages in devotional service, especially in deity worship, and follows the order of a bona fide spiritual master, he becomes a pure devotee. Anyone can take advantage of hearing about Krishna consciousness from a pure devotee and thus gradually become purified. A devotee who believes the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord is a pure devotee, even though he may be in the neophyte stage. By his association, others may also become Vaishnavas. One is known as a materialistic devotee if he simply worships the deity Hari with faith, but does not show proper respect to the devotees and to others. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 2, text number 47. Acharyam eva hareye yaha pujyam Shodayata, Natad Bhakteshu Chan Yeshu, Sabhaktaha Prakrita Smataha. Anyone who engages with faith in the worship of the deity of Hari, but does not show proper respect to the devotees and to others, is known as a materialistic devotee. However, by associating with a neophyte devotee who believes that the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, one can become a devotee also. When Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanatana Goswami, he said, Shradavan Janahaya Bhakti Adhikara Uttama Madhyam Kanishta Shraddha Anushari Yahara Komala Shraddha Se Kanishta Jana, Krame Krame Teno Bhakta Haibe Utama Rati Prema Taratamye Bhakta Taratama. A person who has attained firm faith is a real candidate for advancing in Krishna consciousness. According to the faith, there are first class, second class, and neophyte devotees. One who has preliminary faith is called Kanishta, or a neophyte. The neophyte, however, can become an advanced devotee if he strictly follows the regulative principles set down by the spiritual master. The pure devotee whose faith advances becomes a Madhyama Adhikari, an Uttama Adhikari. C.C. Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 64, and verses 69 to 70. It is thus concluded that even a neophyte devotee is superior to the Karmis and Gyanis because he has full faith in chanting the holy name of the Lord. A Karmi or a Gyani, regardless of his greatness, has no faith in Lord Vishnu, his holy name, or his devotional service. One may be advanced religiously, but if he is not trained in devotional service, he has very little credit on the transcendental platform. Even a neophyte devotee engaged in deity worship in accordance with the regulations set forth by the spiritual master is in a position superior to that of the fruitive worker and speculative philosopher. Okay. Interesting verse. So please repeat after me. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is the topmost human being. Okay, so we'll just say prayers. These are called the Mangalacharyan, which are prayers of respect to the spiritual masters, teachers, so that when we speak, it has more of a transformative or spiritual effect. So if you can join if you know the prayers. If not, if you just hear, they have great spiritual blessings or potency. Chakshum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadam mayam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raganatam vitam tvam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha kaupatrubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha vaditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, everything is about relationship. And actually, relationship has a lot to do with trust. Right? Have you ever had some kind of friendship, relationship with someone, and they didn't trust you? Anyone had that experience? Yes or no? Yeah? Okay. And so, if you know someone doesn't trust you, does it add to the relationship or take away from the relationship? It takes away from the relationship. Because if there's a lack of trust, it means that there's something missing in the relationship. So, it's very interesting here, in the purport to this verse, what is being emphasized is faith. Now, faith is a very tricky word in modern society. Right? Because people have had so much faith in so many things. And they've been let down. Right? In so many areas of life, people have had faith, they've invested faith, they've trusted someone or something, and they've been let down. So it's completely natural that an intelligent person in today's world will not have faith of a blind nature or blind quality. Okay? It would be natural. It would make sense. So many times you hear about scams, right? That this was going on, you thought it was like this, and then later on you found out something completely different was happening. So that breeds a certain mindset. It breeds a certain mentality and a certain skepticism. A certain skepticism in relationships, a certain skepticism towards authority, and of course, a certain skepticism towards anything that claims to be of a supernatural or transcendental nature. It's understandable. Yeah? It's completely understandable for an intelligent person to think this way. At the same time, faith is a basic currency for life. In other words, everyone, every living being, unless they have faith, they cannot live a practical life in this world. No one without having faith can live a practical life in this world. Huh? What do we mean by that? Anyone ever had a job? Anyone? People are scared to put their hands up. I thought the recession was over. Okay. So, when you work, there's a promise that you're going to be paid something for your work, okay? So we're not talking about volunteering now, we're talking about paid employment. So when you work, you have a job, you work first, you get the payment later on. They give you a contract sometimes, right? So it has your name on it, there's all these details. But that contract in reality is a piece of paper with some typing on it. You have some faith that that contract has some value. The organization that employs you, you have some faith that if I do the work for a good month, then after that month, I will see some figures on a screen which says some money has been deposited into my account. Is that true? Right? They could be lying to you. But you take it on faith. Because faith means some anticipation of something that will happen in the future. You're not paid immediately. Right? Hopefully no one's here working for the black market cash in hand, okay? So we're talking about normal, respectable work. You're not paid immediately. You're putting in a good number of hours first. And you're getting paid later on. So you're taking it on faith that if I work, if I do what these managers tell me, later on I will be able to gain something. We are all sitting in this room. Practically every living being on this planet, every living being who's ever been on this planet, is on the planet now, will be on this planet, has intrinsic faith in gravity. Intrinsic. You don't wake up one day and think, you know what, I've got a bad feeling about today, you know. I've got a feeling the gravity may not work. We may need to tie ourselves down somewhere, you know, just in case it just stops working. That's faith. The fact that gravity worked last year, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that's actually no guarantee whatsoever that gravity will hold you to the ground at this present moment. It's a faith proposition. Huh? When you went to school, all the stuff that your teachers told you, even the teachers you didn't like, right? You accepted what they said on the basis of faith. Huh? You ask the average person in the street, are there such things as atoms, molecules, etc.? They'll tell you yes. You ask the average person on the street, have you seen an atom? Have you seen a molecule? Have you seen a nucleus? A proton, a neutron, an electron? The average person will have to tell you they haven't seen it. But you fully accept that these things exist. That's a faith proposition. So therefore, our first assertion is that to be a sane and functional person in this world, you accept faith. You're accepting faith. It doesn't matter whether you're religious. Doesn't matter if you have absolutely no spiritual inclination at all. You accept faith. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshmana Nanda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gauri Nitai Guru Parampara Srila Prabhupada Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. So everyone accepts faith. Sometimes you see people trying to argue in debates. And often the way an argument in a debate happens is it just to whoever can be the most audacious, arrogant, egotistical, and even insulting person, they tend to come out on top. Because if you insult the opposition long enough, it just makes it seem like you're really sophisticated and clever. Right, because you can kind of ridicule them in an intelligent way. But this has absolutely nothing to do with the truth. There's a real difference between an individual who wants to understand what is the reality of the world, what is the reality of life, and an individual who, out of false ego, just wants to seem that they are better than others. And the difference, ladies and gentlemen, is a difference in maturity. It's a real difference in maturity. People who have deep strength of character, great maturity of character, who have the readiness to understand the truth, it's a very powerful thing. The truth is very powerful because the truth endures. And if you understand the truth and you live according to the truth, you've just connected with a force of nature. And you've just begun the journey of lifetimes. So faith is there in everything we do. Now, it's often argued that if you're religious or you have some belief in God, then it's automatically assumed that your faith is blind, right? I've seen you religious types before, right? Singing, dancing. It seems very, very sentimental, you know. But I'm different. I'm sophisticated. I'm more intelligent. I don't have blind faith. But it's very interesting. It's very interesting that in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the tradition of Krishna consciousness, blind faith is also condemned. Blind faith is actually condemned. But intelligent faith, the type of faith that you invest in something that's going to get you a real and lasting result, that is never condemned. That's considered an activity of a wise individual. Does that make some sense? So there is what is called transcendental logic. Transcendental logic means a person loves themselves enough to invest their faith in a way that's going to get them the greatest result that they can possibly achieve. And this purple is speaking to that. Because even within any culture of spirituality or God consciousness, it's not that every single believer in God is equal. Religion, God consciousness, has never been a one-size-fits-all affair. In this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, God himself is being asked, who is a devotee or who is a servant of God? And he breaks it down. The first answer he's giving here is that whoever chants the holy name of Krishna even once is worshipable. That's amazing. I mean, you told the average guy on the street, hey, you know what? If you just chant Hare Krishna, I'll worship you. It's not bad, right? Normally you have to get on X Factor to be worshipped, okay? But this person is prepared to just, you know, you just chant Hare Krishna, according to God himself, you're worshipable. Isn't that amazing? Huh? How does that make sense? How does that make sense? What is being explained here, or what is being alluded to here, is that life itself has its own intrinsic meaning. Life itself has a meaning and a purpose. And funnily enough, when an individual acts on the original purpose of life, they gain a happiness which is actually of an unprecedented nature or an unconditional nature. Life itself has its own intrinsic meaning. Now you can argue the point. You can say, how do you know? That's your opinion. I have a different opinion. But according to this statement, this is God's opinion. According to the statement we just read, the person who created life, who created everything, he's saying that life itself has a purpose, has a meaning. What is the purpose of life? And in one sense, more importantly than that, even if you know the purpose, why should you do it? Why should you act on the purpose of life? It's a very, very good question. Because generally what's understood or what's considered about religion is it really, it's a bit dry, right? You're going to have to miss out on all of these things. You're going to be bored. You're going to be unhappy. But you know what? When you die, you may get something, right? You may get something back. Yeah? Suffer now, maybe, and maybe enjoy later. That is the commonly held misconception of the pursuit of service to the Supreme Lord. It is such a deeply held misconception that you have practically millions of people on the planet who won't even go close to anything spiritual because they have a misunderstanding about what the spiritual paradigm means. And I'll tell you honestly, in one sense, that's not an accident. It's not an accident. Have you noticed that whenever you hear about anything religious or spiritual in the modern world, is it a positive news story? Let's put it that way. Yes or no? No. There was a bombing recently, right? And even without having to go into any detail, what's implied is it has some kind of religious overtone. Okay? So in the modern world, most people, even if they don't mean to consciously, there is a subconscious association between anything religious and so many negative things such as terrorism, restriction, lack of sophistication, blind following, or at least a huge lack of enjoyment. When was the last time you ever heard about a group of people who are religiously motivated, who are doing something positive for the world? Just think about it. But yet every single day, millions of people on this planet who have some type of religious faith or belief are doing all kinds of work to try to serve humanity. Isn't that interesting? Very interesting. So it takes people with a certain level of intelligence, a certain level of character, and a certain level of sophistication in the modern world to have the ability to actually think for themselves and to actually come to a sophisticated and intelligent conclusion based upon some proper questioning, understanding, and inquiry. Such people in the modern world are extremely rare. That's not your average person. Right? Such a person, even who thinks for themselves, really thinks for themselves, that kind of person, to have that kind of quality in the modern world, this is extremely rare. But practically every single one of you in this room, just the fact that you're here now giving a sincere reception to these discussions, this means that the people in this room are extremely rare. Because it takes a certain type of caliber to be making this type of inquiry. Now, within or amongst those people who are trying to dedicate their lives to the Lord, there is also a difference. Right? One of the biggest misconceptions about spiritual pursuits is that everyone who comes to God is immediately perfect. Think about it. It's actually a very strange proposition. It's like saying that every patient who checks into the hospital is immediately cured. Have you ever known a hospital like that? Right? Because if you do, we need to check into that hospital very quickly. Right? Or it's like saying that every student who goes into the university is immediately a PhD graduate. Is that how university works? Is that how a hospital works? No. People go into the hospital because they recognize that they need to be healed. And at any particular point when you're visiting the hospital, some people have just checked in. Some people, they're doing pretty well. They, you know, a huge amount of the disease has been cleansed of them. And some people, they're just about ready to check out of the hospital. So even amongst those people who have some interest in God, there's differentiation. Huh? So you have what is called the Kanishta Adhikari. Those people who are beginners on the process of love of God. They've just checked into the hospital. Right? So you have to give them credit. They recognize they're ill. They're taking the medication, okay? They're taking the medication. It's all good in that sense. But you can't say that they are back to 100% health. That's taking it just a tad too far, okay? So when you come to visit them, right, in your new suit, right, that you spend a lot of money to buy, and you're asking them how they are, and they sneeze on your suit, you can't jump up and down. No, they're ill, but they are taking the medication, right? That is your beginner devotee, your beginner on the path of love of God. This is called the Kanishta Adhikari. It is also called the Prakriti Bhakta, or the materialistic devotee. Why? Because there's still so much of the disease of materialism. There's a huge difference between your goal and your situation. Do you understand that? What is it that every sincere devotee has in common? Every sincere devotee has the goal in common, but they don't have the situation in common. It's just like every sincere patient has the goal of becoming cured, but at any particular point, they're not all equally healthy. Does that make sense? Now, there's one other small point that we need to bring out about the hospital. And it's an unfortunate but true fact. It's something that we often don't talk about as God-conscious people. But have you ever been in a situation, be honest, have you ever been in a situation where you were given some medicine to take and you thought, I'm not taking this. Right? I don't take this medicine. It tastes horrible. Right? I remember when I was young, when I used to get a cold, I didn't mind getting a cold when I was young because they had this banana-flavored cough syrup. It tasted fantastic. Yeah, I would work at getting a cold just to get the cough medicine. It was delicious, you know. But you know what? When you grow older and you have the same cold, they give you this stuff. It tastes absolutely horrible, and you're thinking, what happened? You want to get the child prescription again, right? So sometimes it's the case that even people in the hospital are not taking their medication properly. So it's not a guarantee that because you're in the hospital that you're automatically going to become cured. The hospital is a situation. What you do with the situation, that's down to you. Does that make a difference? Does that make sense? So in one sense, when you're looking at different so-called religious people, you have to see, are they actually taking the medication or not? Yeah? Are they taking the medication, and also, are they taking the medication as it's being prescribed by the doctors? Right? You can even have the medication and take it, but you know what? I don't really like the prescription. Right? I want to take it when I feel like it. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, okay. So technically speaking, no one can say I'm not taking the medication. I'm taking it. But I'm just taking it here and there when I feel like it, you know. Or if the medication is particularly nice, I'm taking it all down in one go, even though you told me to take it in stages, right? Sometimes when you're ill, the doctors tell you, take the medication. You have to also change your diet and your exercise and your lifestyle in a certain way and be careful to avoid these types of situations. Because if you don't avoid these types of situations, you won't get cured. Your disease will get worse, right? So that's the other factor. Okay, so I'm in the hospital. They told me to take the medication. I'm taking the medication. They said, be careful. You have to take it in this way. You have to change your lifestyle, right? You have someone who's smoking 20 cigarettes a day. They've got a big issue with their lungs. The doctors put them in the hospital. They've been given medication. Look, you have to stop smoking now. Okay? But you know what? When the relatives come and visit, you know what? You know, bring me a box, right? No? Don't tell anyone, right? And bring some deodorant so when I smoke, we can spray the area so no one can tell that I've been smoking. Right? Is that person going to be cured? Yes or no? That's a trick question. They may get cured, they may not. If the medicine is more powerful than their bad habits, they may get cured. But what you can know for sure is that they're going to get cured at a slower pace than if they followed the full prescription. Does that make sense? So these are describing different types of people who are in pursuit of spirituality, who are in pursuit of the Supreme Lord and love of Him. It's never been a one-size-fits-all affair. So the real thing to understand by this is, what type of patient are you? This area in the Chaitanya Charitamrita has a series of following verses. Because this pastime is a pastime where certain residents of a particular place called Kulinagram, they've approached the Lord and they're asking Him who is a devotee. They come back year upon year and they ask Him the same question, who is a devotee? The first answer He gives is this answer. Whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is a topmost human being. He said, this is a devotee. Someone who chants the holy name even once is a devotee. Right? That's one definition of a devotee. Right? So technically speaking, they registered in the hospital, right? Okay, I've come in, I've registered, I'm supposed to be a patient. They checked in just once, they're a patient. That doesn't make them a good patient necessarily. But you can't say that they didn't check in. You can't say they didn't recognize that there's some healing that needs to be done. So they are a patient. Quote, unquote, they're a patient. When these same residents of Kulinagram came the next time, they asked Lord Chaitanya the same question, right? Who is a devotee? And Lord Chaitanya replied, the one who is constantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, they are a devotee. They are a Vaishnava. Vaishnava means a devotee of Krishna. Right? Now, if a patient has checked in and is consistently taking the medication according to how it's been prescribed, they are like the first category, they're patients. But would you say that they're a better caliber of patient? Yes or no? Yeah. And would you say that of the two, they're far more likely to become healthy quicker, in a more sustained way? Yes or no? Yeah. So they're both patients, but they're different caliber of patient. The wonderful thing about this Krishna consciousness is it's extremely personal. Because your relationship with Krishna is also deeply personal. And at any particular time, all of us are on different stages of our spiritual journey back to Krishna, back to love of God of Krishna. Krishna consciousness is religion imbued with intimacy. This is, Krishna consciousness begins in one sense where religion ends. Religion ends in you believing in God, you having some faith in God, and then, you know, you have a peaceful life. But, you know, you believe. But Krishna consciousness starts at that point. Okay, now you believe in God or have faith in God. Now, what is the process whereby you will realize and experience God? Our mission is to see Krishna face to face in this lifetime. We don't gamble. Yeah? And that means in the real sense. It's not that you believe in something and then you just have to wait till you die and see if your gamble paid off. But by the transcendental process, we call this Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. By cleaning your consciousness, you can directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By engaging in Krishna conscious or spiritual activity, you can directly experience the bliss or the spiritual ecstasy that comes by serving and being in relationship with the Supreme Person. Has anyone ever felt blissful when they've engaged in the collective chanting of the holy names of in kirtan? Raise your hands if you've ever felt some bliss in doing so. Okay. So this is a special thing. Why is this special? Because in the modern world, practically no one knows that Krishna consciousness, that God consciousness is an experience. They think it's a belief. They don't know that this is something you can taste. Who cares about belief? What are we looking for? We're looking for spiritual experience. So the first category, someone who chants the holy name even once, that is considered a neophyte devotee, a beginner on the path of Krishna consciousness. Second stage is called the Madhyam stage, the intermediate stage. Someone who's constantly chanting the names of Krishna, they are more elevated in their progress towards love of God. This person is called the Madhyam Adhikari. Then the third time the residents of Kulinagram approach the Lord, and they asked the Lord, who is a Vaishnava? Who is a devotee of God? This time, his answer was very interesting. This time, he says, anyone who even upon seeing them causes others to chant the holy names of Krishna, he is a Vaishnava. He or she is a Vaishnava. Very interesting. There is something very esoteric about the people that we associate with. There's something esoteric that happens. There's an esoteric effect. Have you ever met people, or have you ever met someone, when you meet them, you just feel there's a warm vibe, right? You meet them, you feel, oh, this, you know, is a warm person. There's a just kind of nice vibe about the individual, right? Everyone carries their own kind of, it's almost like atmosphere or their own internal weather condition with them. Some people, you meet them, you think, yeah, it's warm. I like this guy, you know, he's kind of cool. Yeah, warm vibe. Other people, you meet them, and upon meeting them and coming into contact with them, you think, there's something distinctly chilly going on here. Right? Something like, oh, this atmosphere is a little bit cold, you know? A little bit frosty. Everyone carries their own internal atmosphere. This is such a powerful thing. This is explained in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali Muni. What you think, what your feelings, all of these things you're carrying on so many subtle levels, and it's influencing people at a very, very deep subliminal level. So when a devotee, by their full absorption in the Lord, when their consciousness is saturated with love of Krishna, when their heart is abundantly overflowing with the vibrations of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, because it's like their heartbeat is the vibration of the holy name because of how deep their love for Krishna is. In the presence of such people, if you are humble and receptive to their association, then what is being carried in their consciousness also spills over somewhat into your own consciousness. These are very deep points of spirituality. Because this Krishna conscious process, it is extremely esoteric. It is the most deep and profound philosophical and spiritual understanding, not only of Krishna and how to love him, but of the entire nature of reality and the true nature of the self and how everything works in a deep way. So these things you can experience. So as someone deepens their Krishna consciousness, you can look forward to amazing experiences happening in your life. You can look forward to these amazing miracles happening in your life. And what is the greatest miracle? The greatest miracle is that by your sincere love and devoted service to God, to Krishna, he reveals himself to you more and more and more. The soul is hankering for spiritual experience. All of us are hankering for deeper experiences. And this culture of transcendence, it is literally a means to feed the soul. It is literally a means to feed the soul. Now there's even more excitement that comes. So you have the different types of patient. The Uttama Adhikari, or the pure devotee of the Lord, is like a person who's completely cured. But there's even more to it than that. Because he's completely, or she's completely cured, and because they knew how to take the medication perfectly, they are also qualified to help other people to take their medication perfectly as well. So sometimes, even in a hospital, you have patients who are about to leave and they just encourage the other patients. Yes, I took the medication. It works like a charm. And I found a few different things. I found that if you take the medication first thing in the morning before you have breakfast, it's even more potent, you know? Or if you take the medication and you're careful to do it like this or like that, you get even more for the regime that you're following. What this means, ladies and gentlemen, is that Krishna consciousness is not like a job. It's not just simply a question of how many hours you put in. It's how expertly you take the medication. It's how expertly you follow the prescription. It's how expertly you're able to take guidance from the doctors. Because sometimes, you know, like you're in a hospital, the doctors have given you some medication, but do they check up on you every now and then? Yes or no? Right? They should be checking up on you every now and then, hopefully, right? If they're good doctors. I don't know what hospitals you've been in, but the hospitals I've been in, I don't know, I've never actually stayed in hospital, I've just visited. But the doctors are meant to come and check on you regularly. And if they check on you, they may adjust your prescription, right? You know, you're healing very nicely, so you have to, we're going to change your dosage like this, we're going to put you on this. So in a similar way, in the Association of Advanced Devotees, the basic prescription always remains the same. And that's what we're being given here. The basic prescription is that we need to connect with the Supreme Person. How are we going to connect with the Supreme Person? The Lord is none different from His name. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the soundtrack of spiritual existence. By chanting the names of Krishna, you're directly coming into contact with spiritual energy. And that spiritual energy has a cleansing effect. Yeah? So His Holiness Chan Muli Maharaj, when he gave morning class yesterday, he talked about this, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. It means you can actually clean away anything from the consciousness that is actually causing you to be less than the best version of yourself. We call these things anattas. Atta means wanted, anatta means unwanted. So when we chant the names of Krishna, you're actually cleaning away anything from the mind that is actually unwanted. You're cleaning away anything from the mind that actually can cause you distress, suffering, and unhappiness. And as the mind is cleaned away, as the impurities are cleaned away from the mind, you're able to perceive yourself as an eternal soul. And as that happens more and more, you also gain the quality of fearlessness. Why? Because if you know you're eternal, then you know that absolutely nothing can threaten your existence. So this is an extraordinary benediction to be able to connect with this process of Krishna consciousness. Just by chanting the holy names of Krishna, you're able to practically overcome death. Right? There's a saying that there's two things that you're sure to experience in this world, right? Death and taxes. Okay? So unfortunately, even if you chant the holy names of Krishna, we can't do anything about the tax situation. Okay? Well, actually, I take it back. You have some people who are so renounced, they don't pay any tax. Okay? And it's completely legit at the same time. But the point is that one is able to experience a state of deathlessness by engaging in this transcendental process. So often when people are looking into Krishna consciousness, they think, why do I need to bother? Actually, everything that everyone is looking for has one thing in common. Everyone is looking for happiness. Everyone is looking for happiness. But often, the same thing that causes one to be happy today is exactly the same thing materially that can be the cause of one's greatest distress in the future. So we have a center in London. And so one of the devotees, he was in the square chanting the holy names. He was just doing his personal meditation. And in Soho Square nearby, there is the office of Paul McCartney, one of the Beatles. So this was a few years ago. So Paul McCartney came out of his office and he was in the park. And he looked a bit distressed. And he saw the devotee chanting. And the Beatles, this building was donated by George Harrison from the Beatles. So they all, knew of Prabhupada, and they were, you know, they had that connection. So he was obviously aware of the devotees. So he was in the park. And at that time, he was going through his divorce. So he was actually speaking to the devotee about what was going on in his life at that particular time. Obviously, it was a public affair. It was in the news and so on. And it's interesting. You could consider that this person, very wealthy, very famous, he meets someone, he's expecting that this will be a good situation. Otherwise, why is he getting married to this person? But who could have known that in future, that same person who you're making vows to, who you're so happy to be with, ultimately it's going to end in a negative situation for that particular person. So he was speaking to this devotee about how he went through a divorce. And you know what it's like when someone is very wealthy, when there's a divorce, they literally lose millions. Yeah, because in the divorce proceedings, you know, so much of the estate goes to the ex-partner. This is interesting. Yeah? We see so many examples in the modern world where something that can be the cause of one's happiness at one point, later on can be the cause of so much distress. There's a wonderful story that our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, tells. He speaks of a sage who was walking through a village. And as the sage was walking through a village, he came across different members of the village. And as he came across different members of the village, he made a statement to each of those members. The sage came across a brahmachari, which means a student of Krishna consciousness. And he told him, you can die. You should die. Later on, the sage came across a pure devotee, someone who is completely pure and has achieved love of God. He said to him, you can live or die, it makes no difference. The sage came across a prince. He said, you should live as long as you possibly can. And the sage came across a butcher. And he said to him, you shouldn't live and you shouldn't die. So, the sage also explained why he had made those different statements to those different personalities. So he explained to the brahmachari, to the student, to the person who was practicing Krishna consciousness as a full-time student, he said that you should die. Because this celibate student had been practicing for a long time as a student. Therefore, he was accruing so much spiritual benefit. So he said, you should die. Because when you die, you'll take birth in a higher situation because of all of your spiritual practices and austerities. So you should die. Later on, that sage had come across the prince. He told the prince, you should live as long as you possibly can. Right? It's interesting. We were giving a talk in one company on Diwali, which is a celebration of good over evil, the return of Lord Ramachandra to Ayodhya. And it was a corporate presentation, and someone challenged us because we had said about how important it is for leaders to be principled. And someone said, but I've seen that if you're principled and you behave well, then, you know, you don't succeed, you know? So isn't it false that you should be principled and a good person? We said no. Because he was basically trying to say, isn't it the case that good guys or good girls come out last or finish last? We said, no, this is not exactly true. I said, first of all, to be a leader, you have to be good, but you have to also be strong and you have to be wise. That's the first point. So being good as a leader is not good enough. But then we explained something else. I said, all of the people who you see who are successful, even if they're behaving badly now, their success is not due to their bad behavior at the present moment. Their success is due to their previous good behavior. Because it's only by good behavior that you develop good karma. And it's only by good karma that you can have a good or positive material situation. So there's a time delay between the activity and the result. So you have someone who's acting badly now, and they're getting a good result now. True. But that good result is due to their previous good behavior. Now, they're acting badly now, which means that in the future, what's going to happen? Are they going to be successful or fail? They're going to fail, right? It's just a question of time. That's how things really work. So only good behavior generates good karma, and only good karma generates a good material situation. So we were explaining that they're not successful because of their bad behavior. They're successful because of their previous good karma. And their good karma is going to run out, is running out because of their bad behavior now. So the prince is an example of that. The prince is someone, he's born a prince because of his previous good behavior, good karma. But this prince was misusing his good karma by acting in a negative way, by just engaging in sinful activity. And by engaging in sinful activity, he was developing negative karma. And that negative karma would catch up with the prince in his next life. So therefore, the sage was warning him, you should live as long as possible. Because you're acting in such a sinful way now that when you die, you're going to have a negative situation. So you should stay alive as long as possible. Now, when the sage came across the butcher, he said to him, you shouldn't live, you shouldn't die. Why? Because you, in your life, you're engaging in such a hellish activity by killing and slaughtering so many innocent creatures that practically your lifestyle is hellish. But when you die, because of all these innocent animals that you've killed, you're going to go to hell. So you shouldn't live because your lifestyle is hellish, and you shouldn't die. Because when you die, you're going to go to hell. So don't live, don't die. And the sage had also explained to the pure devotee, to the person who had love of Krishna, you can live or die, makes no difference. Why? Because even while you're on the planet now physically, your consciousness is completely saturated with love of God. And when you die, you're just going to go back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world, and engage in more service to God. So whether you live or die, it makes absolutely no difference for you because you have achieved the goal of life. You have achieved prema, love of God. So it's very, very powerful, this spiritual lifestyle, because it allows you to see the invisible. It allows you to see things for what they actually are. One of the reasons why modern society has so many problems is because we do not understand that there's a spiritual root to all the material situations that we're in. Therefore, to solve a problem, you have to go to the root cause. Right? It's just like it's a common understanding that in many areas of modern medicine, when they give you medicines, are they treating the actual root disease or are they just treating the symptoms? What would you say? Symptoms. It's common knowledge, right? It's just treating the symptoms. It doesn't actually deal with the root issue. So modern lifestyles are very much like that. They often deal with symptoms, but they don't deal with the root cause. The root issue. So Krishna consciousness has a tremendous amount to offer the world. It has a tremendous amount to offer the world by giving people a deep solution to every problem. Our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness solves all problems because it deals with the fundamental root cause of all the issues. So we encourage you in your journey of exploration and discovery not to blindly follow Krishna consciousness. No, blind following is condemned. But also, along with blind following, blind doubt is also condemned. Both things are considered foolish. To blindly doubt something that has the potential to give you unlimited happiness would be a sign of a fool. What is being encouraged is an intelligent exploration And what is the greatest way to explore something? The greatest way to explore something is to try it. The greatest way to explore something. This is for the brave hearts. This Krishna consciousness movement, this is for the brave hearts. This is for the people who are prepared not to be just another face in the crowd. As Prabhupada told Guru Kripa, one of his disciples, don't become just another face in the crowd. Because the average person, just to be average, means that you're not being all that you can be. To be an average person means that you're denying yourself the inherent brilliance of the soul. In the Bhagavad Gita, the soul is described as amazing. So how amazing it is when people allow their own amazing quality to shine forth. And that ability to bring out the amazing quality of the soul, the full radiance, the full happiness, the full bliss of the soul, that is achieved by chanting the names of Krishna. And it's not a faith proposition, it is rather a spiritual practice. In other words, one can taste transcendence. One can taste spiritual ecstasy. And it is a fact that will be verified by every sincere practitioner of Krishna consciousness, that there is nothing more thrilling and more breathtaking than the mission and the adventure and the experience of self-realization. It is like an epic. Like some type of suspense thriller. It encapsulates the essence of mystery, romance, growth, development. There is constant unfoldings and realizations if one is taking the medication properly. So our job is to encourage each other to experience the adventure of lifetimes. Our mission is to encourage each other to experience the adventure of lifetimes. The biggest deficit in the world is that people do not experience the deep love that is the eternal nature of the soul. And why are we not experiencing that deep love? Because we are not properly connected to the reservoir of all that love, of that eternal love, of that prema. That reservoir is Krishna. He is a reservoir of all transcendental mellows of relationship. Raso Vaisaha. So we have forgotten this ancient science. And therefore, as much as you hear in the news about people being starved physically, there is a far greater epidemic. And that is people are love-starved. Because the culture of transcendental love, pure love, has been forgotten. But this Krishna conscious movement is a movement to revive that lost science. And I'll end on this point. When you meet people who have a culture and live a culture of love properly, deeply, you'll find that they are radiant. They are deep people because nothing makes a person grow more than love. Right? But not sentiment, but real love. And what does that love mean? It means service. Service to who? Service to the reservoir of love and to the servants of the reservoir of all love. So we encourage you to explore this culture, which is guaranteed to transform you, to enliven you, and to bring out the radiant eternal qualities of every spirit soul who comes in touch with this process. And the essence of this process is to chant the names of Krishna. Chant the names of the person who loves you more than you can possibly conceive. Krishna consciousness is meant to break your heart. That is a fact. Because in our conditioned state, the heart is hard. So Krishna consciousness is meant to break your heart so that the deep, pure love for Krishna that is locked inside, it can begin to flow back to the original personality of Godhead. Okay, so we'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janita Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Any questions or comments? I know I'm slightly over time, but we're just going to take maybe one or two questions.